is Jeff Seymour, and welcome to the podcast. Today I'm going to go over a few things. Being fearful of class, the classics, playing opposites, the training you get at some universities, and the critics. I'll explain. The other night in class, I had a new actor starting. This woman had been acting for a few years, but she was new to my class, and she had been so nervous the whole day about coming into acting. I said, why would you have been nervous? And she said, because she was always nervous before her acting classes because the coach that she was studying with would always criticize her, and, you know, she was just, you know, nervous about what mistakes she was going to make that night, what the coach was going to pick on, what she was going to get slammed for. And I find that amazing. You know, there is no real excuse for that. Well, there are some, and I'll tell you what they are, but I mean, no good excuse. I mean, come on. I know what the industry standard is, what the excuse always is, what the reason is. Hey, it's a tough industry. If you want to get into it, you know, you got to put up with it, pull your socks up. This is the industry, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Well, for those of you that are actually presently dealing with a situation like that, is that how you want it? You cool with that? You like that? There may be a few of you actually that are going to say, I love it. I love it because, you know, he is a straight talker. You know, he doesn't mess about. She really lets you have it, you know, and you got to just pull it together. Okay. But for those of you that are in that situation, I want you to just ask yourself, I mean, really, be honest. Does it get the best out of you? In being honest, you might say, well, no, but what I wish is that I could just finally, you know, toe the line and present my work properly and get, my coach's respect and then earn a different way of being spoken to. That's good. That's very soldier-like. I appreciate that. But let me ask the question again. Do you really like it that way? I mean, if you had your druthers, would you druther it be some other way? I don't work well like that. I don't. I mean, I definitely devoted a whole podcast to this very thing, abusive classes and why people stay in them. But it just came up again. And for those of you that haven't heard that podcast, I'm just going to touch on it here. I think it's a load of bullshit. You know, that is the frustration of a teacher. I don't care how you package it. That is someone who doesn't know how to get to you without just screaming at you. They get frustrated. They can't use their words. And so what they do is, because they can't seem to change it, you see, they blame you, right? I mean, look, I think we have to accept the fact that when a student is in class, when you're in there, you are definitely trying to do a good job. I mean, it's not like we have juvenile delinquents showing up in class, you know, smacking gum and falling asleep in the back. I mean, come on, actors don't do that. No, they show up, they want to kick ass. So when you're dealing with that actor and you lose your temper with them, well, I'd have to ask the teacher then, well, clearly the actor is trying. Clearly they want to be here. Now, let's take away the people that show up late, that don't have their lines down ever, that obviously don't want to be there. I guess that happens. I don't experience it much, but I'm sure. Let's set them aside. That these teachers that have these reputations, they're not saving that kind of behavior for the juvenile delinquents of the class. No, it is the way they work. Everyone in class is nervous because chances are, almost to a person, everyone is going to get manhandled like that. Okay, so, you know, acting like any kind of art that a person has to make up on the spot, you know, it takes finesse. It's not brute force. You're not stacking bricks. So what are you saying? That these people will go home and now really, really, really think about it and then have an epiphany? Maybe. Could happen. But that's not what's going on. That's not what's happening. You have a frustrated teacher, a teacher who can't use his or her words. They just know it's not working. They can feel the class not really paying attention. It seems boring. It's taking too long. You know, it doesn't seem real or whatever awareness this particular coach might have. And so what they do is, in the guise of, you know, getting you to understand this is a tough business, they just get to yell at you. But does it make the actor better? Once in a great while you do that, it scares an actor. They stop thinking about, you know, being self-conscious because now they're totally freaked out. They get up and it's an emotional scene and they end up being a little emotional because they're so freaked out. I mean, these things do happen. But for those of you that are listening that are in one of these abusive classes, let me say again, that shit ain't right, yo. The teacher should not be doing that. That is wrong. Now, there are people that like that. You know, they like these dysfunctional relationships. They like this kind of thing. They go in, they like to be made to feel like they're not worthy, and then they respond to it. And if you're one of those people and you're making progress leaps and bounds, you know, and it's not keeping you up at night, then tally-ho. Keep it up. You're in the right place. But for those, the rest of you that really, really, it's bugging you, and like this woman that started my class, she would be nervous every day before she went because she was afraid she was going to be, you know, abused or screamed at or spoken to so harshly that it dampens her spirit, you're not necessarily in the right class. I'm just saying, don't accept it like that's how it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be like that. I don't do that at all. I don't do it at all because, you see, I take on the task of, I need to figure out the combination of words, of sensibilities, of philosophy to get that actor to the next step as quickly as possible. This becomes my challenge. It's my hobby. My hobby is, how quickly can I finesse an actor to get to where I want them to be so they can feel that progress, so that they can make progress? What is the best way for me to do that? How can I do it? And it doesn't involve losing my temper. And I don't lose my temper because it's uncomfortable. It makes everybody uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable. I don't want to work in that kind of environment. I don't want that kind of vibe. No, I want people to come in. I want them to have a good time. I want them to feel positive and confident. Yeah, I know. It's really tough out there, so, you know, get used to it, cupcake, that whole thing. Yeah, it's tough out there, but why should it be tough where you pay me money to coach you? The world's going to kick your ass enough. How about just while you're in my room, you know, what I do is give you the strength that you need to be able to endure that, not also kick the crap out of you in here as well. That just doesn't make any sense at all to me. And I wish people would stop doing that stuff. But you see, then you would have to get better at what you're doing, calm down, and figure out a way in to get these people to behave the way you want them to. And you need to use your words and your intellect, not your yelling voice and your, you know, demeaning ways. Okay, that's what I think about that. You know, I got a note, email, from a chap named Doug in the UK, and he had mentioned that he was liking the podcasts, but he was presently engaged in a lot of classical work in the UK, and he really enjoys it, and he wants to know how one would apply the real-life actor approach to that. Is it applicable? And, you know, what do I think about that? Well, as it happens, the other night in class, a couple of the students brought in a scene from The Crucible. The notes that I gave them about that scene, I think, would apply to any kind of classical theater and Shakespeare and anything else. And that would be, at the base of the scene, you know, whatever that emotional base is of the scene, we can never let the style, the meter of, you know, like iambic pentameter, or any kind of costume or posturing, ever undermine or take away the reality of emotion and need for people to express themselves. I mean, I think that's the one thing that I noticed is compromised in classical theater when I see it, is that people fall into this brilliant kind of music and style of it, but it doesn't feel like people are actually having real emotion. And now, how do I know that? You know, is it easy to tell? Oh, absolutely. And here's why. When you get into those kind of private moments where suddenly a wife suddenly tells the husband or husband suddenly tells the wife in front of people, you know, they're being heard, they are there, we can hear it, what's going on, it always feels uncomfortable. When I see the stylized theater, classical theater, when I see these older bits, I feel that people kind of get distracted with, you know, almost the pageantry of what it is they're trying to serve up. You know, the style and the language, which can at times lead them astray from this very thing. But in the end, I really need to feel like you two actually have a problem right now. Not a problem in the way that you use your voice or the way that you're phrasing or, you know, what you're kind of indicating to me about the fact that you are upset with her and she you. No, it has to have that same kind of raw sense, plus the language, plus the time period, plus the style of what the piece is, all of those things. But man, it just doesn't really work as well as it could and should unless you have that stuff there, that magic sauce of reality. So, Doug, how would this come into play? Well, in any of these podcasts or in my book where I talk about, you know, how we step off, I mean, you can do all the study you want, but when it's time to step off, when the lights go up, when you step out on the stage, when they say action, you have to own the problem, the emotion, your dilemma, your situation. And for me, in the first person, I'm not interested in you giving me a rendition of what this might look like if, in fact, it actually were happening. No, I want to forget that I'm watching actors, and I want to get sucked into the reality of it, iambic pentameter and all. I mean, that's just how it has to be. And I find that, you know, I'm not someone who is well versed in the, you know, Shakespearean language, the words and what everything means when the references are made. But what I find is when I watch Shakespeare that's well done and the actors really seem to be speaking, you know, they're not just doing a clever recitation of these beautiful words. No, they actually are speaking through those words. I find I'm able to understand it. And in even the phrases and words I don't quite understand, I'm able to put it together and I can follow what's going on way more easily than I can when someone isn't doing that. You know, an analogy would be is if you were speaking to someone who had, you know, very broken English, and every other word or every third word, they went back to their language, or they just missed it. There was nothing there. You know, when somebody is actually speaking about something, you can follow them. You can follow them even when there's gaps, even when they're using their, you know, native tongue to fill in, and then it's just every so often, you can follow it. And I think that when people are actually speaking, you see, as in life, with they seem to exude from all their pores what it is they're trying to say. We just get it. They're that present with their ideas and what they're saying that it's really, we can follow it. And so, in conclusion, I think that the real-life actor approach comes in mighty handily with classical work, in as much as you remember to own your problems and step forward with them, not through, you know, some sort of, you know, acting homework that you've done that now you're going to recall and recite and hopefully sound like that person, but you've accepted the fact that kings and queens from days of yore, when they got upset about stuff with their loved ones or whoever, it was actually happening. It was real. They meant it. The room had that very thick feeling of problem actually being had. And not through the way they used their voice, but through the emotion that they were actually having and going through. So if you can make sure that that is present in your work, well, you do all that other fancy stuff they're teaching you about, and you learn all about the words and phrases and history and everything else. But at the end of the day, when you step off and the queen is giving her king a rough go, it ends up feeling like a man and woman having a problem. That's how you'd use it. Okay, now playing opposites. An actor that I worked with in Australia, you know, we had a very successful session together and working together, and this woman really got it. And she's, you know, hasn't been in it for that long, but she'd had some experience and then really kind of connected with the real-life actor approach and did well. But you know, to be honest, when I first saw her work, I thought that she definitely had chops and she knew what she was doing. And if anything, I just tried to encourage more of the same behavior. And so I got an email from her telling me, you know, not to be angry with her, but that she had joined one of these crazy audition classes and wanted to share an experience that she had in it, but didn't want me to think any less of her, because a lot of times these things are silly and, at times they're not well taught, and that, you know, perhaps you could get in some bad habits. But, you know, I think when actors have a good solid foundation and they understand, you know, which end is up, I think that they're more capable of navigating even the trickiest of these classes or teachers and, you know, are able to do their work and then, you know, not be derailed by some nonsensory that might occur. And that's the way it is. And of course, some nonsensory did occur. And so she was telling me about it. Specifically, it was the idea that she was reading a scene opposite of a fellow who was asking her out on a date. And when he went to ask her out, she said he seemed, you know, incredibly angry and weird. And quite honestly, if it was in real life, she would have thought, this guy's a serial murderer. There's no way I'm going to say yes to him. But that isn't an option here because, you know, her job is to present the other side of the script, and that is that, of course, she readily accepts. What she did know, and the guy admitted to afterwards, was that the guy had done that old chestnut of playing an opposite. Okay. You know, in life, we do play opposites. It's a fact. A guy could be completely bonkers for his next-door neighbor, some woman, and He's just, when he thinks about her, he almost, you know, he can't even talk. He gets so nervous. So he plays an opposite kind of instinctively in that rather than being completely unnerved when he's around her, he's going to act a little more cool. He's going to play an opposite. He is playing an opposite. Intuitively, he plays an opposite. He plays an opposite so she won't think he is just completely whacked when he's in her presence, and that might not be as appealing, so he acts unwhacked. He acts like Cool Hand Luke. No problem. Do people do this? Oh, yeah. Come on, you've done it. But it has a real human purpose when we do it, you see. We may consciously play an opposite, but the opposite is actually done whenever we can be in control of it, and certainly if we're smart, so as to get the desired effect that we want. Opposites in life aren't done just willy-nilly, just whack out, I'm going to do an opposite. Arr! There's always a purpose. We play opposites in order to gain, to get the thing we want. We just don't do them willy-nilly. And that's the mistake of this particular exercise, and that's how it gets misused. Acting isn't created just to have acting exercises and you win if you do something opposite. Case in point, the actor said there's no way she would have gone out with this guy. He looked crazy. That's not a good opposite. That's just an opposite for acting effect. And why do you need to practice that? Why, just to see what the effect is? Well, what are you learning from it? The other person's going to say what they're going to say anyway because it's in the script. So, if you're ever going to try this thing, you're going to call it playing an opposite, which I'd rather you not, but if you did, just keep in mind that at the end of the day, you've got to be able to finesse the desired outcome. That's why you're doing it. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it. Right? Okay. I got a message from Kieran, who told me that he'd been listening to the podcasts and he really enjoyed them. But the very things that I was talking about in the podcast, you know, about the things you shouldn't be doing, were the very things that they were telling him to do at his university. So I said, well, check and see if the people that are teaching you have ever done any work in the industry. That was all I said. I knew the answer. And he came back and said, no, they haven't. All they've done is teach. Yeah, that's the problem. That is the problem. The resistance in the industry, as I am definitely on a mission to change the way acting is taught, for all intents and purposes, the people that are at these universities think they're doing the exact right thing. There's no reason for them to believe that they're not doing the right thing. I mean, there's no real test for it, you see, because when the actors that go to these universities get out and if they don't work, well, that makes perfect sense. Because hardly anyone gets to work in this industry. And so they'll never say, geez, I wonder if it was the way that we taught them. They'll just say, well, they just didn't have it. You know, they had the connections. They didn't get the agent. They didn't have the stick-to-itiveness. They didn't have this. They didn't have that. They didn't have lady luck on their side, whatever. It's a thing that when people actually work in the industry, they'd have more of an idea of what it is that you actually need to do and what is actually going to work on a set and how you actually need to prepare yourself and what you can actually expect to come up against and, you know, what auditions are really like to actually be the one auditioning. You see, that's the other thing when these teachers give you seven things to think about, all this nonsense. They've never had to, you know, hit their mark and deliver. They've never had to deal with these seven things. And I think if they did, they might start to think, you know, I think I'm thinking of too many things. I think I'm kind of overdoing that and la, 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 and scale things back and then start to understand how this stuff really works. So, Kieran, that's the way it is, yeah. It all depends on what you want to do. You know, I mean, if you actually want to be a professional actor, well, know that most people that have become working actors went to a place where in retrospect wasn't necessarily, you know, the best kind of teaching. I went to a school and, you know, it was the very thing I didn't like. I mean, I just didn't think any of it worked. Most people I know that are professional, certainly today, mostly had to go through all that, you know, get up in your head and overwork all the homework and you know, kind of meter out how you're going to act and, you know, all that kind of nonsense that I keep saying is antiquated and old. Most people have gone through that. So if you're signed up and this is the deal and you are also interested in having a degree for whatever reason, then, you know, that's where you're at. There's always time to learn the other stuff. And, you know, if you like the podcasts and you've looked at my sample of my book and you like it, you know, you can always look at this stuff and help it augment what you're learning and go at it that way. It's just that as far as a professional class of, you know, getting actors ready actually for the profession and giving them kind of up-to-date info on, you know, what they need to do and how they need to do it and how you need to carry yourself on these sets, you're not necessarily getting that. But how could you? These people have never done it, and so how would they know? And what they might know is folklore or third-hand information. So that is how it is. If you're there for other reasons and you want to get your degree or whatever, then, you know, go for it, man. Tally-ho. Get the whole thing done and also, you know, augment your learning if you want. And if after a year or whatever time you're there to where you're committed, you think, I actually only want to be a professional actor. I'm not here for the degree. And I don't think I'm getting now what I really kind of want, and your instincts are telling you to do something else, and you're listening to your instincts, then you need to follow them, because you're going to be following them for the rest of your life, hopefully, at a great advantage in this industry. And so there's no time better than the present to start paying attention to how you feel about things. Just make sure you feel that way about it, then pursue it, whatever it is. But that's how it is. So thank you for your kind words about the podcast and the Real Life Actor approach. And, incorporate it however you might want to. No one's keeping you from doing that while you're at university. But my advice to you would be, if you feel like things are changing and you're not happy there, well, you're going to need to follow your instincts in this business. So if that's really gnawing at you, make the adjustments. But if you're there, enjoy it. There's no reason to stay someplace and, you know, hate every moment. I mean, if you're committed to being there, get everything out of it you can. I think that's the way it always should be, no matter what. I mean, if we're stuck somewhere, there's no reason to hate it while we're there. If you do, get out of it, but don't be there and not like it. That's ridiculous. You're just wasting days, months, and years of your life. Don't do that. Okay. Now I'm going to end with the critics. You know, this may be what surprises me the most, and that is that I am definitely outspoken about how I think the acting teaching industry has to change, and how I think that most of these methods and philosophies and ways of thinking and teaching are hurting actors and getting them more confused and getting them in their heads than it is to prepare them for the real professional world and give them a skill set that they'll more benefit from, and that it's just time to change. I'm very outspoken about that, as anyone who's listened to these podcasts. And I have to say, I'm almost shocked at how few criticisms I receive. Now, granted, maybe there are a lot of people, I don't want to get you riled up. You know, it's not like I have to hear this stuff, but it's very rare that I get a message from anyone complaining. Now, I have, actually. This chap was very, very upset with what I was doing and just wonders where I get off talking this way, and that there must be something wrong with me, and that now I sounded drunk, and that it seems like I've got some psychological issues and I haven't answered, and you know, so on and so forth. Well, let me add to that. I did receive another message from a young fellow. These are both young people. When I say young, I mean their early 20s. Young to me. Someone who trained with me, a woman, and then she needed coaching and they were friends, or she was going to do a self-tape and he was going to help. And when he tried to talk to her about all of these old acting nonsense shenanigans, she said, no, I don't do any of that stuff. I've been working with this guy and he doesn't do any of that stuff. Well, this young fellow was so incensed by that. He felt that it was so blasphemous that I would dare distort someone's mind with my witchcraft, that he felt it necessary to write me some sort of, you know, harsh notes on my Facebook page so he could, you know, really give me what for. And I made the mistake, and it was the only time I did it, and then I learned from it. I tried to reply to him in a very respectful way of, you know, why I had my beliefs, and then he just went off again. So I ended up having to block the guy because, you know, he was a bit of a nutcase. And then once I did that, he got very angry, and then he kind of went on some other, maybe he just posted it on his thing, but he did this huge paragraph, and what I found incredibly funny was he referred to me as this self-proclaimed acting teacher, and I thought that was humorous, because I don't know, are you knighted? How else do you become an acting coach? At 23, yeah, you're right. I proclaimed myself an acting coach, and then I spent the rest of my life doing it, just like I, you know, proclaimed I was going to be an actor a year before that, and since 1979, that's what I've been doing. And I've been doing those two things solely. That's all I've ever done to make a living. That's all I've ever done in my entire life. Now, I know a lot about this type of thinking of these two particular young fellows, because I was that fellow. That's really how I got into acting. You know, when I was a kid, a teenager, I would be constantly barking at the television, or if I was watching a movie, you know, criticizing. That's not how people do it. That I didn't even believe that. I would, you know, say all this stuff that was, you know, annoying everyone else in my family and any of my friends that happened to watch something with me. But this was my thing. And so that led me to, at 18, declaring that I was going to be an actor, and then I got into an acting school. And then I didn't like the way things were being taught, and I thought there would be a better way, and so that's why at 23, I proclaimed myself an acting coach, and I started then. And then at 24, I designed and built my own theater. you know, I earned the right to be able to speak this way. And I think that's very important. You know, nothing beats experience. What I've learned from having run my own theater, had my own television show, and co-written all the scripts, the thing that I learned, the thing I got most out of it was a humbling. It humbles you. It humbles you because it makes you realize when you actually go to do it how hard this shit is. It is so hard to be good at something. What I really want to get to is this idea. Whatever it is you're doing, whatever your beliefs are, you know, whatever group you're involved with, nothing matters until you get points on the board, okay? Nothing. That's how you win your merit badges. You get professional work. You become a member of the union. You have an agent, and you actually go in and audition, and then professionals say, yes, you're the one. Listen, here's the best way in the world to make your points and to really make them stick. Show us. Show me. Show the world. Show your friends. Show your neighbors. Show everyone. That's why it's called show business. You show us. So if you really believe, now understand, first of all, I've earned my right. I've earned my right to say whatever I want. I've written a book. I have this number one rated podcast, and I've got now 65 podcasts. I've put in my time. I've had my own TV series that I co-created and was in. I had my own theater. I've traveled around the world teaching. I've done this every day for going on 39 years now. I've earned the right to be able to say whatever I want. And if it bothers you, really what the rules say is that you need to prove it to me, just like I did. You see, I stuck my neck out. I said, you know, I have really strong beliefs. And before I just, you know, give myself a hemorrhoid about this, I think what I'll do is I'll try to teach and I'll open up a theater and I will see if I can prove what I know to be true is true. And, you know, I've had some success and I've taken some big lumps, but that's all part of learning. So if you're having a problem with this stuff, then the best way to prove this blasphemous thinking wrong is for you to show me, the rest of the world, how right you are. Go out, get some work, take that thing that I call antiquated acting, convoluted stuff. You believe in it? Make it work. Make it work and get job after job. Maybe start teaching, open up your own theater, create your own TV series. You show us in show business how it's done. You succeed at it. And then what will happen is all the rest of us, you see, will suckle at the breast of your greatness because you will have proven to us that you know what you're talking about. Until then, shut up. Just shut up, man. Shut up. Don't waste your energy. Get on with it. Let's see what you got. Thanks for listening. You have been listening to a Real Life Actor podcast. This is Jeff Seymour. Please remember to follow us on Podomatic or subscribe on iTunes. If you want to know anything else about the Real Life Actor approach, you can always go to reallifeactor.com. Thanks for listening.